Good morning. You're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, Patrick Kulikin. Read my columns at LasVegasSun.com. My co-host, as always, Las Vegas Sun reporter Tovin Lapan. As we tape today, the legislative session is in its final days. Once it's over, we'll do our final recaps and obituaries. But with a few days remaining, we're joined by Las Vegas Sun political editor, Anjanette Damon. Anjanette, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So what is the mood up there in the final days here? Is it a scurry to get everything done?
Gosh, you would think it would be. And every other session that I have covered, it has been absolutely insane at this time, with dozens of conference committees going and lobbyists running like chickens with their heads cut off back and forth between the Senate and the Assembly. But, they went home last night at 6 o'clock. It's really eerily calm. It's the strangest session that I think I have pretty much ever experienced. And I'm not sure where the urgency is. I think, a lot of people went into this session with very high hopes of the Democratic leaders, and even, I would dare say, the Republican leaders working together to come up with maybe not more taxes, but at least a change, a revenue-neutral change of the tax structure. And that went absolutely nowhere. The Democrats have almost entirely capitulated to the governor's budget because they do not have the votes with the Republicans to get anything different done. And so now it's just a matter of going through the motions of getting the session closed down. There's some big bills still out there. There's still some sideshows on stuff like gun control. But at this point, that frenzied pace of trying to get things finished just has not arrived yet.
And at this point, probably won't. I mean, the session's over in a couple days, right?
Right, but, you know, nothing motivates like a deadline, so we'll see what things look like on, you know, Sunday and Monday when people realize, okay, this is it, something might die that I really care about.
By the way, that story I was supposed to file to you, it's going to be late.
Yeah. What did I say about deadlines? But, you know, at this case...
In a way, it's like a perfect ending to a totally nothing session.
You might be able to put it that way. I don't know if I'd be exactly that harsh. I mean, if I'm a Democrat, I may be upset that there was no movement done on taxes. But if I'm a Democrat, Democrats are applauding the fact that they started the process for repealing the ban on gay marriage from the Constitution. They started, or it will go to voters in November 2014, taking mining's constitutional tax provisions out of the Constitution. I just attended a bill signing in which the governor, with Democratic and Republican leaders standing next to him, that would create a driving privilege card for immigrants who are here illegally. So, you know, to say that absolutely nothing was done, I don't think is correct. But in terms of big ground-moving pieces of legislation, anything that approaches fixing the really long-term significant problems that the state has, they just weren't able to pull off.
And Jeanette, I was wondering, did you see, in terms of the saga with Stephen Brooks, did that prevent the legislature from accomplishing some of these things they wanted to accomplish, or is it still on them and their own fault and they should have been able to get a lot of stuff done anyways?
You know, I think that it would be very easy to blame all of their failures on the Stephen Brooks incident, and I don't think that would be right. That's not to say that it didn't really set the tone for this entire session. I mean, the man was arrested 2 weeks before the session started.
Let's just remind our listener
our listener that
Brooks is an assemblyman who was arrested for threatening Speaker Marilyn Kirkpatrick, and he now sits in a California jail after another episode of strange and hostile behavior, this time toward our police in Southern California.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
So that was just 2 weeks before session started. He's arrested on charges of threatening the life of Marilyn Kirkpatrick, who had to basically live her life under police protection for 2 months. And so to say that was a minimal distraction would be minimizing it too much, because it did kind of take over the mood of the building. The Democratic leadership in the Assembly was completely consumed with trying to deal with with this situation, figuring out a way to oust him from the legislature, as well as keep the building safe. You know, he continued to get arrested time after time, tried to buy a gun, was acting very erratically when he was in the building. So that did kind of set the tone. It really delayed any progress on anything substantive as far as policy. And so, yeah, I would say that did affect things. But to blame solely that for the lack of movement on the whole tax question would be wrong.
Let's move to recent news. This broke a few days ago. Warren Buffett's, one of his holding companies, is going to buy NV Energy, our utility monopoly. How was that received in the building? I gathered that there was a lot of enthusiasm for this.
Yeah, I mean, people, you really get the sense of how small a state is because the state of Nevada is, because people in the legislature really were fairly starstruck by this. I mean,
yeah.
He got on a conference call with the governor and most of the state lawmakers, or at least important ones, are, you know, dealing with energy legislation, and talked about this acquisition, and they got off the phone and was like, wow, I talked to Warren Buffett. So, you know, the governor gushed about the prospects of Warren Buffett investing in the state of Nevada. The legislative leaders say this is a great day.
From Omaha. He's coming here.
Well, you know, Democrats in particular think, you know, oh, wow, well, maybe we'll have a benefactor here now that will contribute to our political campaigns and perhaps come to the legislature and argue for better tax structure. I don't know necessarily that we'll see Warren Buffett arrive in Carson City, but
the only way that, and there was some, you know, what did he tell Harry? He was telling everybody, oh, this gives me an excuse. I love Nevada. I'm going to come to Nevada. You know, if we have a giant bridge tournament for money, I suppose he might come here. I just can't. I don't know. The whole thing was a little strange. That, yeah, like you said, starstruck and how great this is.
But, you know, there's a long road. There's a long road of regulatory approval that this deal has to go through, starting with our own Public Utilities Commission, who has really come under fire this session for opposing a major piece of legislation that the utility is pushing. So, you know, I think that they've kind of got their guff up a little bit. You know, I'm not saying that they would definitely throw a wrench into the deal, but I think that they're going to be taking their job of reviewing it very seriously. And, you know, the questions are unanswered about what this would mean for the ratepayer in Nevada. I think there's still a lot of due diligence once the sheen of, you know, the shiny new celebrity in town goes away, then hopefully those in charge with examining the details of this acquisition take that charge seriously and see what it might mean for ratepayers.
And talk about that piece of legislation. The Nevada legislature is considering a significant change in electric monopoly utility policy and energy policy, and they're being very deliberative about it, I'm sure.
Well, maybe that's when we're going to see the frenzied scurrying back and forth between the houses of the lobbyists, who may see that their interest in that legislation being threatened in the last moments. But, yeah, SB 123 is really an unprecedented attempt by the utility to come to the legislature and change the way that they are regulated in terms of acquiring the means to provide electricity in the state. So generally they go before the Public Utilities Commission, which is charged with balancing the interests of the ratepayers with the shareholders and ensuring that the utility gets a meaningful rate of return on its investment while looking out for the ratepayers. But now they've come to the legislature and they're saying, hey, lawmakers, we want you to approve this 10-year deal where we will get rid of coal-fired power plants, which is a politically these days popular move, and allow us to build and now or acquire gas-fired or renewable energy plants. And if the legislature passes this law, and it looks pretty certain that they're going to, ratepayers are going to be on the hook for a massive construction project. You know, some will argue this is a good thing. Ratepayers, whatever the utility actually builds, ratepayers would own. But the PUC has been critical of the deal, saying that ratepayers are going to be taking on an awful lot of risk. You know, if the utility relies a lot more on natural gas, which is very cheap right now, if the price of that spikes for any reason, that's going to be dangerous for ratepayers. And they'll be left with, you know, a long-term financing
liability
of the construction project, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, but they're going to pass it, and the governor will sign it.
The governor, you know, who's been loath to take a position on nearly anything this session, has been very supportive of this bill all the way through.
Right.
And so he's we'll
a
see.
Former attorney for NV at the time. I guess it was Sierra Pacific shareholders, which is widely seen as a proxy for NV for the management.
You know, he has been criticized of having a close relationship also with the lobbyist for the utility.
Right, Peter Arnott, you know, and Greg Ferraro.
That's not to say, you know, last session he vetoed the NV Energy's major piece of legislation. That
yeah, only because you reported how it was such the main sponsor of the legislation said he was owed a good bottle of wine for moving it at midnight on the final day. So
that's right. And we're down to the final days, and there's still a lot of moving parts. The SB 123 is resting on some negotiations that are occurring among a lot of interests in the renewable energy community on several other bills that need to come together before this gets moved out. So I have no doubt that we'll see some last-minute shenanigans, but this is a big priority for some very important, powerful people in the state. So I imagine it'll get to the assembly.
All right. Let's move on to something more important. What is the status of pecan punch as the state's official drink?
That bill, we need to get our colleague Andrew Doman on the phone because he has been bird-dogging this one since the very beginning. And I believe at the moment the Senate did not accept the amendment to the bill that would make pecan punch the state drink, and the Assembly is yet to decide whether or not to recede. If the Assembly agrees with the Senate, then pecan punch dies. If not, they'll go to a conference committee, and then who knows what happens.
Hammer it out. Yeah.
Say it ain't so.
Well, you're from up there. It's a northern thing. Tell us about pecan punch. First, tell us how to spell it. It's important.
Pecan is P-I-C-O-N.
It's not actually, is it a derivative of...
Of the nut, no.
No.
It's not like pecan the nut. It's, yeah. And I don't, it's a Basque drink, and I don't know too much about the history. I don't particularly like it very much.
It's disgusting.
Brandy and grenadine, and it's really not very tasty.
Yeah.
But apparently, if you can get the first one down, the second one goes down much more smoothly.
That's what they always say.
That's
it's like,
every
yeah.
Every alcohol ever.
Right, yeah. Like rubbing alcohol.
Oh, it's
the first
so
one
awful.
Sucks, but. Oh, am I allowed to say that?
Yeah. But you don't want to. You don't want to have a third one because then you're pretty much on your butt. So
yeah,
yeah.
Yes, the Basque region. It all seems like kind of a flailing Northern Nevada power play to me. Is that what you sense?
Pecan punch. I think there's been a lot of flailing Northern Nevada power plays when it comes to education and transportation. We'll see if they win one over on Southern Nevada. I don't know. What would you suggest, Kulikin? Would you like to see the yard-long margarita as the
there you
drink?
Go.
It might be more appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah. A football, a plastic football filled with beer.
Except or at least... no self-respecting Nevadan would actually drink the foot-long or the
yeah, exactly.
margarita.
What about
it's
more
just
like
a tourist, though.
Yeah, like a Rat Pack. Thing like a rye Manhattan or something.
There
something that Sinatra would drink.
That sounds good. I'll go for that.
All right. How about, I think today they're hearing a gun control bill in the committee, right?
I need to double check if the committee hearing's actually today, but Mark Kelly, whose wife was
I think I saw on Twitter before we came on that he is here, and it was also noted that he's pronouncing Nevada wrong.
Yes, so. I know. I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt since he and his family went through a very traumatic experience, but that does rankle. And it brings up a good point. I mean, those who are involved in this issue, they're really bristling against the fact that the Mayors Against Illegal Guns, this national group with a lot of money, is making a political power play here in Nevada rather than maybe letting lawmakers from the state deal with this issue. I think it's really kind of blown up into more of a circus. And that could help.
So Michael Bloomberg does not have the celebrity cachet of Warren Buffett.
No.
Or Nick Cage.
Or Nick Cage.
Or Nick Cage, yeah, goodness. But we do have an astronaut here, and a lot of people are excited about that. So, yeah, Mark Kelly just got done with a press conference out in front of the legislature. You know, and he has a very moving story. There are many moving stories that have been told throughout this process. But the gun control debate in Nevada seems to have gotten away from the serious discussions and more into the realm of political theater. And, you know, that could antagonize some folks or or it could bring more attention to the issue. This could have kind of died a quiet, slow death, that, you know, at the hands of Governor Sandoval, who's not been a champion of private party background checks necessarily.
That's what this bill would do, is extend background checks.
It would. It would strengthen some of the reporting requirements so that the mentally ill would have a more difficult time getting access to guns, so the courts would more quickly have to report when they adjudicate someone mentally ill to the national system for background checks. It would also require, if you bought a gun or if you sold a gun on Craigslist or at a gun show outside of a federally licensed dealership, that you would have to obtain that background check on the person that you're selling the gun to. And opponents of it argue that this is a de facto gun registry, because the gun shops would keep paperwork on those gun sales. Others say, look, there are too many criminals and mentally ill with access to guns, because we don't do background checks on 60% of the sales.
So what are the odds of this passing both houses?
Well, it passed the Senate on a strictly party line vote. Democrats have control of the Assembly. I imagine if they decide to bring it up for a vote, it'll pass.
Mm-hmm.
If it gets to the governor's desk, he said that he will veto it. So
he'll veto it.
I don't know
it.
If he sits down with Mark Kelly, if Mark Kelly would change his mind. But
80% of Nevadans are in favor of universal background checks, right?
The number is pretty high. Yeah, 80%.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, let's talk about you mentioned earlier a decent amount has happened this session. I mean, they started the process of ending the marriage ban, and they did pass the constitutional amendment to take mining out of the mining tax out of the Constitution. But I still think there must be some dissatisfied Democratic legislators who are hearing from dissatisfied Democratic rank and file. What are the chances of leadership change in either caucus?
You know, I would think that that would be a possibility, but it's not really been something that's come up for discussion yet. I don't hear a lot of, chatter in the building about that subject yet. That could change. At this point, there just doesn't seem to be all that much to rebel against. I suppose, you know, a majority of Democrats could decide to vote against the budget, and I'm not sure where we would be if that occurs. And it would be really interesting if the caucuses decided that, you know, the Democrats in particular decided that they aren't as willing as their leadership to go with the governor as far as the spending plan is concerned, and vote against it.
But now the speaker still is working the very scaled back live entertainment tax expansion.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, originally it was going to tax anything where you had fun, it was going to be taxed. I'm only slightly exaggerating, but now it's been scaled back to what?
Well, we haven't seen the change that she's proposing yet, but the talk is that she will give up on this idea of taxing everything from movie tickets to gym memberships to green fees for golf, and just bring it back to closing those loopholes in the existing live entertainment tax. So things like outdoor concerts, perhaps. Like I said, I have not seen the final language yet. It hasn't been proposed or put in written form as we're having this conversation now.
With two days left in the session.
Yeah, it should. Hopefully we'll see it pretty soon.
But that would constitute a tax increase.
There are people who are not paying it now who would be paying it.
So it requires two-thirds.
It would require two-thirds.
Okay, and there's not two-thirds for that, is there?
Well, it depends. Early on, there was Republican support for modifying that tax so that more people were paying it in exchange for maybe reducing the rate or changing. Right now, it's a two-tiered rate, so large venues pay a lower rate than, large venues pay. Yes, a lower rate. I get it mixed up because it's opposite of how you would think. Large venues pay a different rate than the smaller venues.
Huh,
you think
surprising.
So
I wonder why that is. Where are the large venues? They're in casinos.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And that's another thing we could talk about is the power of the gaming industry this session.
Let's talk about that. They've had a very good session.
They have had a very good session. I mean, they got online poker passed, if that, you know, in this, if you want to call it a do nothing session, they did do something on online poker in one day. They got
without a public hearing
to the governor. I mean, they went through the motions of a public hearing.
Okay, sorry.
So they got that passed. A bill that would outlaw sports betting on kiosks in your favorite bar is headed to the governor's desk, where he's expected to sign it. That same bill would impose...
go ahead. Finish your...
Yeah. It would impose some larger restrictions on venues like Dottie's, which use a restricted gaming license for basically gaming, and that's really rankled large casinos. And then we have the comp meals settlement that... is working its way through the legislature now.
Now, explain that one. This has to do with a dispute between the state and the casinos over how comped meals should be taxed.
That's right. The meals that they provide their employees and casino patrons used to be taxed, and then a Sparks casino sued and kind of won. We have a sales and use tax, so the court found that the state could not apply a use tax to the free meals, but had a footnote, because our Supreme Court always tends to put little conflicting footnotes in their opinions that create a great deal of strife. A footnote saying, well, they could possibly be considered for sales tax. So the State Tax Commission said, yes, we think that free meals to casino patrons should be subject to the sales tax. More casinos sued. It's now before the Nevada Supreme Court. If the casinos win, the state would be on the hook for $233 million in
rebates
to the casinos who paid this tax. That is a significant amount of money. It would put a huge hole in the budget. It's almost twice what the governor has proposed spending on new education programs. And so, mm-hmm. you know, the casinos think they have the state in a pretty tight spot. So they've come to this agreement whereby they will drop their lawsuit, not seek a refund on past taxes in exchange for the legislature passing a law saying these meals are no longer taxable. The tax commission signed off on the settlement. A bill was introduced to do exactly that. We'll see whether or not it makes it through the legislature. At this point, it looks pretty good. And so the casinos would have to eat that $233 million rebate that they might have gotten if the court decided in their favor, but they'll no longer have to pay taxes at least till 2019.
It's not like they were banking on that rebate anyway. They're just playing with house money, to use their own language.
I mean, yeah, you could see that as a gun in the back of the state, and who knows if that gun had any ammunition.
Right. So this is how much money we talk to? Do we have any idea what they're saving annually?
It's about the high end would be about $4 million a month, or $48 million a year, if I'm doing my math correctly.
So $100 million every biennium, mm-hmm. we're losing, so that high rollers, or not even high rollers, I guess, sometimes it's just dumb mooks who play too much and get free meals. We're losing that revenue.
You're telling me you haven't sat a slot machine or a table and had free drinks?
I have gotten, not free meals though.
No free meals. I think this would apply to drinks too. So, you know, it's a tax burden that the casinos would have to bear. It is a significant amount of money going forward in the future. And I suppose in 2019, the legislature, could come back and revisit that and change their mind. But if they do that before then the casinos under the agreement would be entitled to those refunds.
Oh, so they could come back, but they won't?
Under the agreement, if the you can't bind the hands of
people. I mean, next session.
Right. Yeah. If they did that, then the casinos would get rebates under the agreement.
But they could come back next session and they'd be okay.
No, if next session, if the legislature decides to change the law back to tax the meals, then the casinos would be entitled to their rebates. It's a strange...
Yeah, how can they bind supplement. The next legislature?
Well, they can't. They can't. So the next legislature can do it, but under the agreement, then the casinos would get money back, so...
Okay. All right, well, what was I going to talk about next? I don't remember. Not much veto. There's been a lot of bills that passed, although not much major legislation. The governor has not used his veto pen like we saw for instance, under Governor Jim Gibbons?
Not yet, but the bulk of the bills have not reached his desk. I mean, the legislature just finally kicked into high gear here in the last week or so. Prior to the deadline, I think the governor had seven bills on his desk. So now he's finally starting to work his way through all of them. We got the first veto today, Friday, which was a tick Segerbloom bill that would allow for punitive damages and I think lawyers' fees in employee discrimination lawsuits. And that bill passed the legislature on a strictly party line vote, both houses. It got to the governor's desk, and he vetoed it. But, you know, now I think the legislature has saved up most of their important legislation. You know, we have medical marijuana still pending. Obviously, the energy bills are still pending. Gun legislation is still pending. So I think we'll see next week, really, if Sandoval's veto pen kicks into high gear or not.
One thing that we've seen this session, really the results have really become plain this session, finally, is term limits, which kicked in last session, where two sessions ago, a lot of members had their last session because of term limits. So you had a lot of new members last session and even and more new members this session. Talk about the effect that has had.
Yeah, and I think, again, we'll see that come into play these last few days if they're able to functionally close down the legislature. There's a lot of, you know, mechanically that they need to do to get the budget passed. They have, you know, five gigantic budget bills that need to be introduced and then sit for 3 days before they can be passed. So there's a lot procedurally that people are worried about, not just because of term limits. So you have brand new leaders, you have a lot of new lawmakers, but at the same time, the Legislative Council Bureau, which is essentially the nonpartisan staff that runs the legislature, they've had a lot of turnover too. So there's some concern that the legislature won't be shut down on time. And then, you know, beyond that, there's been some consternation, and you can decide how sympathetic with it you want to be, on the part of longtime lobbyists who are used to things going a certain way and dealing with certain people who add, you know, a set of understandings that the new lawmakers don't have. So negotiating with them, these lobbyists say, has been a challenge. You know, again, you can decide how much sympathy you have with that.
Uh-huh.
There's been, you know,
don't they know who I am?
Yeah. Or
I'm with, you know, R&R Partners.
You should. Yeah, I think everybody knows the lobbyists from R&R Partners, but, you know, there's a lot more explaining of the background on things. And, you know, I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing, because you have people with a fresh set of eyes coming in and maybe seeing situations differently than the people who had that institutional knowledge. That said, institutional knowledge can be important when you look at where the mistakes were made in the past and not repeating them. So, you know, I guess I'm kind of agnostic on this whole question of whether or not it's been a good thing or a bad thing as far as term limits are concerned. We'll see if they can get the, I mean, if I want to talk about my own self-interest, I would like them to actually close the session on Monday so we can all go home. But other than that, it's been interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm. And maybe next session will be different with some more experienced leadership. We will have to see. All right, Anjanette Damon is the political editor of Las Vegas Sun. We want to thank her for joining us. Anjanette, we're going to grab you probably another time after the session ends so we can do a wrap-up, if you will join us.
Sounds good.
And my co-host is Tovin LePan, reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. Our producer is Steven Zeller. I'm Patrick Kulik, and you've been listening to Neon Eden on KUNV 91.5. Join us next week.